4. Training and partnering with your executive assistant. Eason had a very interesting experience when he worked for a CEO of a billion-dollar company. His principal wielded power in a rather odd way. He liked to keep his direct reports and everyone else working with him guessing. That means he kept them on their toes, perpetually worrying whether they would be the next one handed a pink slip and told to pack their stuff. Frequently, without any warning, people would be fired. One day, after supporting that CEO for 2 years, Ethan was on the receiving end of the pink slip. It came completely out of the blue. Never, in the 2 years of working with the man, did Ethan receive an indication that his support was insufficient. In fact, Ethan had heard from other executives in the company that he was doing exceptionally well. It's not fair to put anyone in Ethan's position. It's also not fair to yourself or your company to allow someone to continue working for you without knowing whether they are meeting your expectations. It is equally unfair to neglect to give them a chance to do so through training or instruction. That kind of relationship with your assistant, or any direct report, is doomed to fail from the start. In addition to providing feedback and reviews, you must put in the time and energy required to set your EA up to succeed, especially if they are to be enabled to use their superpowers and become a performance multiplier for you. That means you must supply them with every bit of knowledge you can, detail your expectations, and learn to partner with them. Inventory of knowledge. If you currently have an EA on staff to train the new one coming in, you may have very little to do with the training. Unless, of course, you want massive changes from the way your outgoing EA handled things. Otherwise, to assist the incoming EA to transition into their role as smoothly as possible, you will need to do a self-inventory on a number of fronts to compile an assortment of information for your new hire. That information includes elements from your personal life. You will want to provide the contact information for your primary home and any secondary ones you may have. Also include the contact info of those close to you, spouse, parents, children, and perhaps even siblings if you're close to them. Ensure the new EA knows the birthdays of everyone important to you. Provide the information for your dentist, optometrist, general practitioner, accountant, attorney, and other important business associations. Think about what you will expect your EA to do and arm them with the kind of knowledge that will be helpful. For example, do you prefer flight arrangements to be made around your children's school schedule so you can be there at drop-off or pickup? Do you have food allergies or preferences? Give them a data dump of all your loyalty reward program numbers and information and logins for frequently visited websites. Next, share all of your business contacts and explain who they are. Do you sit on any boards? Include those contacts as well. Also, provide an organizational chart for your company, including the responsibilities noteworthy colleagues handle. Provide this information on day one. Depending on how large your circle of influence is, your EA may not be able to digest it all in one day. However, the quicker they get that information, the quicker they will be able to get up to speed with everything you do. If all of this seems a bit daunting, we do have an onboarding questionnaire on our website that can help you with this process. You can find it here. info.proassisting.com/client-onboarding-questionnaire. In addition to contacts and personal preferences, review your calendar. Detail for your EA how frequently you meet with your board of directors or other regular meetings. How does your year work overall? Is it broken into quarters? Does your fiscal calendar follow the regular calendar? Once those basics are established, share with your new assistant any white papers related to your work, marketing materials for your company, and industry information sites and resources. Are there any blogs you follow or favorite articles you think are compelling and informative? Provide everything you can for your EA to steep themselves in what is important to you and your company. All of that information will be stored in their memory and will serve to inform their approach to their work for you and your company. The question may arise, though, about what to do if you do not already have that information compiled in easy-to-find references. What if you have no standard operating procedures, no calendar preset? We suggest you work together with your EA to create them, at least to get the basics filled in, and then make it part of your EA's responsibilities to continuously update checklists, contact lists, and ways to catalog pertinent information to create efficiencies and put structure around the chaos. Inventory expectations. An inventory of your expectations is imperative for a number of reasons. Of course, expectations related to goals and performance should be clarified so that both the principal and the EA are working toward the right targets. But also, inventorying and discussing your expectations with your EA will help ensure you are being realistic. Many times, adversarial relationships between principals and their EAs arise because an assistant is forced to deliver bad news that something is unavailable or not possible, thus disappointing an executive with unrealistic expectations. Sometimes executives think their EA's superpowers mean they can wave a magic wand and make anything happen. While EAs often can do what appears to be magic, sometimes restrictions are placed on all of us that no amount of magic will undo. If a principal has preconceived notions that their EA will always come through on unrealistic demands, they will be frequently disappointed by an EA who is constantly delivering news they don't want to hear. Frequent disappointment can lead to a negative attitude and adversarial behavior. Ask yourself some hard questions about what you can realistically expect from your EA. Then ask yourself if you have done everything you can to set up your EA to succeed. A principal cannot expect ESP or any other superpowers to be of optimum use unless the proper amount of time is given to the assistant for continuous onboarding, as well as for letting your assistant into your thought processes and priorities. Ways to partner. There are a multitude of strategies you can take to partner with your EA. The following are some we have found to be the most productive and that lead to the highest level of efficiency and performance. Make introductions. One of the first things to do, right off the bat, is to copy your new assistant on every single email. Within reason, of course, highly personal or confidential correspondence that does not relate to the company does not need to be shared. By doing that, they will get some context, as well as a feel for your rhythm and the people you're emailing most. In addition to that, send out an introductory email to everyone in your company and your VIPs outside it that welcomes, in an enthusiastic and heartfelt way, your new EA into the fold. It does not have to be very formal, unless you want it to be. A quick note like the following will do. Hey everyone, you know how slammed I am and that I really want to make everyone happy and not be a bottleneck. Well, here's the person who will help me do that. Meet Jennifer. She's a rock star. It took us a while to find her, and she's exactly what we were looking for. She should be included in everything that is non-confidential that you send to me. And please note, if she's telling you something, know that she is representing me, my office, and our company. All of our help getting her on board is greatly appreciated. Along with sending the email, encourage all of your direct reports to take 15 or 20 minutes to meet with your new EA. Encourage them to confide in her what they hate about working with you. Seriously, and what your office could do that would make their life easier. Yes, this is a bit self-deprecating, but it will go a long way toward encouraging camaraderie and great working relationships between your direct reports and your EA, as well as between your direct reports and you. One of our newest clients, former CEO of Eli Tahari and current board member, Rory Tahari, expressed the reasoning behind this tactic of introductions beautifully. She said, "I used to tell new direct reports and my new assistants that if you want to be successful, then you have to understand you don't work for me. I work for you. You need to be my boss. You are in charge of making sure I am on top of everything. And if I'm not, then you need to let me know." She understood that whatever the executive does impacts how everyone else performs. To help spread awareness of the new EA to people outside the office, some principals include their assistant's name and contact information in the signature line of their emails. Not only does that immediately show your EA and everyone you know that you have a high level of respect for them, but it helps train people that there is a system. Before they go to you for every question, they can check in with your EA. Training. When it comes to training your EA, again, an outgoing one is ideal to train the incoming one. If you do not have one, then it's up to you to train the new EA. You should have a few guideposts to get you started, one of which is that inventory of things you don't want to do, the reason you hired that person to begin with. Start with that list. Show your new EA what needs to be done and how you have done it to date. The person you hired should have some experience under their belt from other companies and will be able to pick up on your needs quickly. Setting up their email account in a way that gives them access to your contacts and calendar will help them tremendously. That way, they can proactively get you up to speed with whom you are meeting with, if necessary, what they do, and why you are meeting with them. If you're comfortable giving your EA access to your email, that's even better, because then they can read through your sent notes to see how you reply to people, how long it generally takes you, who you ignore or take a while to respond to, and who you quickly respond to. Note, if you are going to allow your EA into your emails, it will be a wise move to have them sign an NDA and understand you have a confidentiality policy. If you have a file system in place already, review it with your new EA. If there is not one in place, suggest your EA use her inbox as a task list. If they keep their pending items or if they are working on something and waiting on information to come in about it, their inbox is a safe spot to store the emails related to it. Most email clients have a search feature that allows for easy retrieval when necessary. Then, when the project is done, or whatever the emails are concerned with is complete, they can file the emails in designated subject folders. Of course, this means they have to stay on top of their emails and not let their inbox get cluttered up with junk or useless information. Immediately establish feedback meetings, where you can check in to see what your EA is working on and what you need done that day. Then, ask if they understand how to do what needs to be done. Show them, if necessary. Keying them into your thought process to show them why you do what you do might be helpful. A client of ours actually created video vignettes to do just that. For one video, he filmed himself booking a flight. In it, he explained that he didn't like to fly any earlier than 10 o'clock in the morning because he needed to get his kids on the school bus. When he found return flights, one landed at 8 o'clock in the evening, the other at 11:30 at night. Although the later flight was $100 cheaper, it was worth that much for him to arrive earlier in the evening. His process leads right into the idea that sometimes executives think it's quicker to do something by themselves than explain it to someone else, particularly someone new in their job. Sure, that may be true on the first go-around, but in the long run, if your EA can take that task off your plate, your time savings will pay off in dividends. Isn't that one of the reasons you hired an EA to begin with? So we encourage you, whatever you are doing now that your EA can handle, video yourself, take screenshots of your steps, have a Zoom call while sharing your screen, or have them sit next to you and take notes about how and why you are doing what you are doing. What thought processes are you working through as you do it? What has worked well in the past and what did not? Was the budget similar? Were there other restraints then? Or are there restraints now that did not exist then? You can do this for tasks like booking flight travel, creating a sales presentation, or booking a company retreat. Perhaps you are thinking about a board meeting that is coming up, and you need to put a presentation together for it. Discuss it with your EA. For example, I've got to have a prep meeting with my direct reports to get all their KPI data before this date. I always get the KPI data a week and a half before the board meeting. The more you can talk through what's going on in your head during your EA's first month of working with you, the faster they will be able to get one step ahead of you to help you. This concept includes letting your EA know who can and cannot interrupt you in the office or when you are on calls and other visitor management strategies. Train them to say they are not at liberty to tell people where you are, unless they are at liberty to do so. How strong of a gatekeeper do they need to be? What are your thought processes behind that decision so they can apply it when necessary? Is it okay for them to provide your cell number to certain people? If so, who are those people? What makes them special enough for that number? Laying those ground rules when you train your EA will make it that much easier for them to step in, amp up the superpowers, and be the performance multiplier you hired them to be. No micromanaging. We are astounded every time an executive tells us, "Oh, I know I'm a micromanager. I'm working on it." In this instance, working on it is not good enough. If you have the self-awareness to know you are micromanaging, then stop doing it. As the principal, you will naturally share as much as possible with your assistant because that person is there to help you. The more information they have, the better equipped they will be to use their superpowers to magnify your performance. Micromanaging does the opposite of its intended effect. It inhibits superpowers and prevents your EA from mining their previous experience for innovative ideas that could be of benefit for you. For example, they may notice that you send the same email out several times a month as a sales follow-up, and it doesn't get that high of a response. It is possible that your EA has experience with better written copy and can rephrase your message in such a way that they improve the response rate. You have no idea what your EA may have learned in the past, what they've had to research, or what kind of projects they've been part of. And that means you have no true idea of what they can bring to your table. Allowing your EA to do things differently than you is often something a principal has trouble allowing. You must remember that as long as they are just as effective as you, or more so, then they should be able to do it their way. They are juggling different balls than you are, so it is very possible that not doing it their way causes more work for them than it would for you. Accountability versus criticism. We do not need to go too far into how to handle mistakes here, since we covered it back in Chapter 3. The key point to remember is everyone makes mistakes. The ideal way of handling them is to ensure something was learned so the mistake doesn't happen again. We've witnessed executives harshly reprimanding their EAs and even bullying them, and can honestly attest that such tactics are not sustainable for a long-term relationship. There should be no keeping score, no gotcha attempts to find an EA doing things wrong, no testing them to prove something, no adversarial approaches to enforce behavior. That is not what partnership is about. Partnership is about collaboration, not confrontation. The idea that you can belittle or berate your assistant, a la the movie Swimming with Sharks, is being thrown by the wayside due to a couple of factors. First, the hashtag MeToo movement empowered women, who make up 98% of assistants, to stand up to management and not take abuse. Second, the combination of assistant plus technology plus emotional intelligence / art of hospitality expands the meaning of executive assistant to encompass business partner, chief of staff, project manager, assistant / scheduler, and personal assistant, the performance multipliers, if the principal is open to treating their assistants as such. And when you do hold an EA accountable, be sure you're right. Remember, your EA is great at documenting. Once, Ethan had a client who needed to go to Washington, D.C. Previously, he had always booked her to fly into the Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport because that airport is right in the city, whereas Dulles International, the other airport in the area, is about 45 to 60 minutes outside the metropolitan area. However, to get her in on a direct flight that landed when she needed to, he had to book her into Dulles for this one particular trip. He ran it by her first, and she agreed it was the best way. About 3 months later, while stuck in traffic in the car on her way into the city from Dulles, Ethan's principal called him and, well, was rather terse with her admonishment for booking her through that airport. He was a bit flustered by the call and could not remember why he had done so, so he listened and apologized, then they hung up. The incident happened at the beginning of their working relationship, so Ethan was more than mortified thinking he'd made a mistake. He felt he had proved to her he wasn't trustworthy. So he logged into his email and found the one he'd sent that documented their decision to use Dulles. He forwarded it to her with a note letting her know the reasoning behind the travel itinerary. She replied quickly with an apology and wished him a good weekend. However, if Ethan had messed up and just forgot to book her for Reagan, his principal would be justified in being angry. And Ethan would need to create a system or a tool to ensure he never made that mistake again. The executive can encourage that by asking, when things are calmer, how they can prevent the mistake from happening again. Perhaps they could create a table that listed frequent travel destinations and her preferences for each one that he could check prior to finalizing any reservations. Feedback and reviews. Related to holding your EA accountable is the concept of providing constructive feedback. It is so valuable for your EA, they will be eager to hear it. Feedback can begin almost immediately upon hiring. Begin with daily meetings to go over what they did and how it went. Once you realize you have little to talk about, you can move those check-ins to weekly meetings, then monthly, then quarterly. Those meetings give your EA an opportunity to see how you do things and what your processes are. They can also open a dialogue for your EA to provide feedback on how to improve things. Because your EA is coming in with fresh eyes, they may notice things that you gloss over. So, as we mentioned in the section on micromanaging, these meetings can give your EA the opportunity to show you there is potential for improvement by trying a new way. As the leader, you may have to encourage this line of communication. Ask them how they have handled similar situations in the past, or if they have any kind of insight into how things could be improved moving forward. You can even take this concept one step further and empower your EA to find ways to make things better. Tell them, if you see me thinking about a decision and you may have some insight, please let me know if we are by ourselves and not in a group setting. When they hear something or come across a communication that triggers an idea or resembles something they have had success with in the past, encourage your EA to provide you with that information when they can do so with confidentiality. In this way, you can encourage innovative thinking in the way that your EA supports you. Your feedback for one another should always be given in total honesty and with a heartfelt personal touch, as we spoke about in Chapter 3. Being candid is always the best approach with feedback, as well as with reviews. However, even knowing that radical candor is the best approach does not always make it any easier to start the conversation. When executives have difficulty starting a feedback-based conversation, we suggest they try a process developed by Steve King, as presented in his book, Brag, Worry, Wonder, Bet: A Manager's Guide to Giving Feedback. He suggests four dialogue starters that can be used as standalone statements or in combination. They are, when I brag about you, I brag about, when I worry about you, I worry about, when I wonder about you, I wonder about, if I were going to bet on you, I'd bet on. These openings provide a framework to build a discussion on a topic for feedback. For example, when I brag about you, I brag about the way you're able to create clear messages in your emails, can open a discussion about communication in general. When I worry about you, I worry that sometimes your intuition leads you astray, can lead into a discussion about someone's tendency to waste time going down rabbit holes. When I wonder about you, I wonder if you may not make these kinds of mistakes if you slowed down a little bit, can progress to a dialogue about better time management. If I were to bet on you, I'd bet that you're going to continually get better, can be a beautiful way to introduce a concept like believing that an EA needs more training. One thing that is imperative to remember when providing feedback is that, in addition to being honest, you must explain why an issue is an issue, why it matters that it is done correctly. That is one of the ways you can bring a heartfelt personal touch to the conversation. Knowing what that reason is can soften the review process and make it about the company and not so personal. That, in turn, might make the review process go a little easier. Despite your EA loving to get feedback, most likely they will dread the review process. Everyone hates the review process, both the reviewers and the reviewees, which is why we stress that they should be held in less formal settings than an office. Reviews should be a time to kick back and have a couple of laughs about the year. However, they should also conquer the serious turf of where improvements need to happen as well as areas of strength. The last thing a review should be is a surprise for the reviewee. Stephanie had a principal who gave two reviews a year. With each one, the principal opened with, "If anything comes as a surprise to you, then I'm not doing a good job." But he was great at his job, and consequently, those reviews never held any surprises. When he wanted to see improvement, he was straightforward about it, explaining what he wanted to see and why. Stephanie always knew where she stood with the man and where she stood with the company. Having that kind of open relationship led to an optimal working environment, in part because expectations were clear and understood.